for coming in this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks. Grateful. I'm just grateful to be here. And we're 6 feet apart, by the way.
Yeah, we actually made that work in this room. It's a little tricky. We're kind of evolving how we're doing some things around here. But obviously, it has been a very busy time as this has evolved. Mm-hmm. And of course, almost an oversight earlier in the week was Election Day.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. With just a lot of things that have been happening in all of our lives and some stuff that's happened in my personal life with a death in the family and whatnot, I had actually completely forgotten that Election Day was Tuesday, and I was talking to a candidate that I was supporting in another Senate district primary race down south, and her and I were talking that day, and I was trying to give her some pointers as she was asking me questions and whatnot on stuff, and then all of a sudden it dawned on me later, I'm like, wait, 8 o'clock tonight's the deadline. It's not Thursday. I thought it was Thursday for some reason. So, yeah, it's been a crazy last couple months.
And the election, we had probably a lower participation rate than normal. There were less things going on in the primary. Mm-hmm. Both sides of the aisle, the presidential nominees are a likely conclusion already. And really, for a lot of people, the COVID-19 situation made it a lower priority. And I was talking to one of the other members of the legislature the other day who talked about how odd it had been to try to run for office, mm-hmm. and not have an event to go to.
Yeah, no, it's been extremely strange. Like I said, I was involved with two different ladies that were running as Republicans in a House and a Senate district primary race down in the Southern Oregon region. And because I had no opponent in my primary. And so it was very strange. You know, we were always trying to figure out, like, how do we run an effective race with not being able to have, you know, debates, be able to really go out and door knock. It just really has made it odd. And in some ways, it's very unfortunate because it protects incumbents disproportionately. So if you're already elected, you already have that name recognition, it's shown to really be something that protects the incumbents. And that's, you know, yeah, I'm an incumbent, but I always want everybody to have a fair shot for the voters to see who they really want to represent them in whatever elected position that we're discussing at the time. And this primary, hopefully that won't continue through the rest of the year into the general election, but at least for the primary, incumbents definitely received a benefit in that capacity.
And going into the fall, you now know who you've got an opponent. There were two folks running on the Democratic side, so that's set. And but again, it's, you know, normally campaigns are kind of a lot of behind the scenes stuff in the summer. It really starts hitting in September after mm-hmm. Labor Day. Yep. This year it might be a little after that, depending on how things go, but it just kind of depends at this point.
Yeah, and you know, and for that matter, I'd like to congratulate my opponent. She won a dominating primary race on Tuesday night, so congratulations to her. I'm more than happy. I read an article that was written about the race Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. She made comments about debates and whatnot in the future. I'm more than happy to do at least 6 debates with her, 3 here on the I-5 corridor of the district and at least 3 on the coastal side. I'd probably cap that at 8 because there comes a point where you got to keep doing the work. And so, but I'm more than happy for her to pick the venues, the moderators, and I'll just give it all to her. Her and the Democratic Party can pick this however they want to, because I'm confident in freedom and liberty and the message that is and the body of work that I've been involved in my time in the legislature. And, you know, let's just get to it.
What's it been like in the past week? I know everybody in the legislature, as of in a lot of other positions, especially in public life, it's one Zoom meeting after another.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I've said it before, I am like the least tech savvy millennial of all time. I really kind of shy away from the tech stuff, but I have been involved in several Zoom meetings over the last several weeks here, and that's been different. I don't like it. I'm very much an extrovert, you know, personality wise. I like the camaraderie of being around other human beings and having those conversations, you know, in a room or in the same geographical location. Whereas Zoom, you know, it kind of dehumanizes things. And so I'm hoping this is something that won't last for very long, because I think it's important for humans to have that social interaction on a real level versus a digital screen. But you use the tools that are available for you for the circumstances you go through in life. And Zoom is very much a big tool right now.
Legislative days start, is it tomorrow?
It's 2 weeks from now.
Is it 2 weeks? Okay. So legislative days are coming up, and I understand those look like they're going to be virtual in some format as well.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting choice by the majority party. I don't really see why that's necessary. There's more than plenty of options up in the Capitol building for us to be able to be there in person and keep social distancing, wear masks, what have you. Just like everybody else in public life is doing at the moment. But they're in control of everything, as we all know. And we don't really have any say over anything on the other side of the aisle. So I guess we'll just have to submit to the choices they've made.
So yesterday, the state budget forecast came out, $2.7 billion estimated hit mm-hmm. in the current spending period, plus a kind of a gloomy prognosis for the yeah. near future.
Yeah, it's $10-plus billion of a projected budget shortfall over the next three budgets. So that'd be the next 6 years, three biennial budgets. And who's to know for sure how this is really all going to work out? It could be much worse. It could be much better, depending on how the economy wakes back up, assuming that we see... Because it's not just about us here in Oregon. It's a nationwide thing. It's even a worldwide thing as far as the economy goes. It's very much a spider web in that sense of everything's kind of connected these days. And so here's hoping that we will have the wisdom to get back to work and be able to keep this virus under control and the spread of it and whatnot. You know, I'm still trying to wear my mask when I go out in public and wear, you know, because even if I don't feel like there's much of a threat, I was just having a conversation with a nice person about this. even if I don't necessarily feel threatened by the virus, I think it just shows respect to your neighbors who may be older or maybe of a different viewpoint that masks help. And there are scientific studies that are showing and proving that it reduces the spread by about 75% if you are wearing a mask. So just out of respect for my neighbors, I think it's a good thing to try to do. But I would also expect the same respect from them from the standpoint of not infringing upon my rights or my neighbors' rights who feel otherwise as far as assembling together, walking out in public, doing what they have to do, whether it's work or pleasure related. There's a real scary movement underway in this nation now that is in full view of everyone that is really a soft communism. They call it socialism, but socialism is just a fancy word for communism that's on its way to full maturity. And so we're starting to see the real signs and effects of when you give too much of your freedom away to the government to quote unquote take care of you, quote unquote protect you. What you're actually doing is you're making yourself a child and the government the parent. And as we all remember when we were children, parents are in charge. And if we are truly free citizens, we are not subjects. We are free citizens that people like myself in the Senate or Governor Brown, we're not your authority. We're supposed to be your servants in the form of leadership and governing. And I understand that desperate or crazy, unforeseen issues like we're dealing with right now, times like we're dealing with right now, sometimes require a little different strategy, a little different tactic. But what's very much disappointed me through this entire process over the last two or three weeks is how... we've seen so many of our fellow citizens in the form of governors or legislators take a shortcut in actually leading, and that is to just seize control of our lives. They have not sought to reason with us. They have not sought to join hands with us as equals, as their brothers and sisters. Rather, they have treated us as peasant sheep, and that's just the way I see it. I'm very concerned to see so many people out in our population that are just regular folks like myself, so willing to give all of their freedom away and their children's freedom away to individuals who are just people like you and me, Kyle. They're elitists, but they're still just people like you and I. And the elitist brand is not a compliment. It's something to fear, because an elitist is someone who sees themselves as more educated, more higher bred, more successful, more capable, more able to not only manage their own lives, but manage yours and mine as well. And it's something we really need to be concerned about. I very feel fearful over. So that's what I'm going to be continuing to promote as we go into the general election season this year. Is I just want everybody to know when it comes down to a position I take, you can really just chalk it all up to which one is going to make you a more free man or woman, and that's the position I'll be taking. It's pretty simple. It's not a Republican position. It's not a Democrat position. It's all about your freedom.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. State Senator Dallas Hurd with us. The interview, a podcast at 541radio.com. Back in a couple minutes on News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. We're going to head into the weekend a little bit early tomorrow in this time slot. Summer of COVID-19. And correspondent Christopher Cruz from Westwood One News. A special to get into Memorial Day weekend. We'll have another series of specials on Monday as well, in place of Inside Douglas County and some of our other programming. State Senator Dallas Hurd in with us this afternoon. Of course, now phase one reopening. It's been interesting to watch. I've talked to people in the business community. I've talked to folks. I've gotten messages from folks that said, hey, why isn't this place open yet? Why aren't these people open? Every business has done things a little bit differently. Some folks are under corporate guidance overall that, you know, determines even though you can legally do certain things here, they're not quite ready to do it, or they want to be darn sure they do it really well mm-hmm. for the long term. Mm-hmm. And so some restaurants in Roseburg, for instance, aren't open yet because they're going to do a whole lot of work inside to revamp things mm-hmm. and all mm-hmm. that. Some people are just kind of doing it in the short term and, mm-hmm. and making things work. It's been interesting to watch that. There's also the supply chain issue. You know, some folks, if they were partially closed, had to get more stock of food, drinks, whatever it is that you're selling, or, you know, even retail goods, things like that. So some people have jumped, you know, right back in on day one. And for some people, it is kind of a slow reopening.
Yeah, no, it's been interesting, Kyle, to say the least. You know, we had a local business that was in communication with me a few days before they decided to open, asking my opinion on things, and they were just desperate financially to get open. They still may not make it. That's the thing. I mean, a lot of these folks, even though they're back open, they're at a restricted capacity in industries like restaurants where the profit margin is tiny at best. And that's if you're running high volume, and folks that have never managed or ran a business don't understand. It doesn't mean they're not intelligent people. It's just an experience thing. Just like I don't understand a lot of things that a public school teacher understands, because I haven't any experience. But in the business world, you know, that last 10-20% of business is where you make most of your living for the year overall, because there's a certain amount of upfront costs to being in business that are they're permanent, they're a must. But you spend the first 50-70% of your total revenue basically getting back to even, to paying for those things on a 12-month annual basis. And it's those last 10-30% of revenue that really brings home the bacon to feed your family and keep those other families employed and taken care of that work with you. And so I reached out to the governor personally a couple different times in advocacy for that local business, and just, you know, explaining to her the situation. And I had the business's permission to do so, just explaining to her their situation. And I used the words beg. I said, Governor, I'm begging you to not let your agencies fine these folks, because they're already on death's door financially. And they're not opening up a week before phase one because of outright just giving you the finger, so to speak, for lack of a better word. It's because they're truly desperate, and they're going to lose everything if they can't open up. And they've said they still may lose everything because they'll be operating at a diminished capacity as they strive to comply with what we knew was going to be a lot of the requirements of a phase one opening before it actually happened. And, you know, after the second call, after they had opened up and OSHA had stopped by and red tagged them and said that they were going to give them a fine, before the fine was issued or stated to be issued, I called the governor again, and we had another conversation between her and her chief of staff and myself. And I said, Governor, I'm begging you, don't let your agency fine these folks. They can't afford it. Nobody around here is trying to just be disrespectful to you or anything like that. Which, frankly, I don't even like saying that, because I don't see the governor as our authority. I see her as our servant, just like I am as your senator, folks. I am your servant. I am not your authority in any way, shape, manner, or form. If a person in my position ever thinks they are, you need to get rid of them, including myself. But her response to me, and I wasn't going to bring it up until I found out that OSHA had said they're going to give them two massive fines, the mom and pop operation. Her response to me when I said, please don't fine these folks, was, Senator, they've defied a governor's order. And folks, defiance is a word I use for my children when they don't obey their mother or myself, because they're children and we love them and there's got to be order in the home. I've never used defiance to define the act of a free citizen involving anything related to my office at the state Senate, or in my thought process of any other elected official. You are not subjects, but folks that talk about you in the words of defiance when it comes to you exercising your freedoms and rights to provide for yourselves do not see you as citizens. They see you as their subjects. And that should terrify all of us. Doesn't matter if it's a Republican or a Democrat. We need to get over that nonsense because it blocks us from really seeing who is representing us and who is governing us when we see them purely through the lens of party. We need to look at them for their character. We need to look at them for the way they see us and how they treat us. And I'm hoping Governor Brown is going to do the right thing. I'm not rooting against her. I really am rooting for her. But in rooting for her, she has to show me that she's got the ability to turn around the direction she's been on and start acknowledging that we have fundamental rights and freedoms that really no legislature or no governor should ever be able to come up with some BS document of a bill of legislation that says that we don't have those freedoms and rights. And that's what we have right now. We, you know, it's beyond me to understand how so many citizens in this state can still be on the side of a governor who has from the beginning allowed liquor stores and dispensaries to be open, but not allowed communities of faith to really have any option to assemble and exercise their freedom there. Nothing against liquor stores and dispensaries. They're just people like you and I, and they're operating legally, and they should be allowed to be open. But it's amazing to me at the after phase one came open, and we've seen so many retail operations open back up, but yet still communities of faith are still not legally allowed by this governor's decree to assemble. So it's been amazing to just watch that process roll out. I was very encouraged for about 3 or 4 hours when the circuit court judge from, I think it was Baker County, threw out her entire executive order authority just to see the state Supreme Court, who every single justice for the state Supreme Court of Oregon was appointed by hard leftist Democrat governors. That's just a fact. And so they are a bought and paid for court. They do not represent the people, in my opinion, because you can tell, and this is how you can tell, they rushed in a matter of hours to put a hold on that circuit court judge's ruling, not to ensure that the people's freedom and rights were not being trampled on by the government, but to protect the government's authority first. Again, throw out the Republican and Democrat stuff and just think about that. They were not in a hurry to make sure that your rights were being protected. The Oregon Supreme Court was in a hurry to make sure that Governor Brown's authority stayed intact. And then they'll go ahead and review the case.
Couple minutes left. I know you wanted to talk about a recent loss that your family had.
Yeah, thank you, Kyle. My grandma Marion Hurd passed away on May 3rd. And she was the most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life. And it's been the toughest few weeks by far I've ever had. And I've had some tough ones. We all have had tough times in our life. But this one just, it was like being hit by a bus and being dragged along. And I'm so grateful that I have the family that I have. I'm so grateful for my wife. My wife is so much like my grandma. She just blows me away. She kept me from just completely falling off into the abyss in those several days after my grandma passed. I thought I was going to be prepared for it. My grandma was 95, but I spent the mass majority of my conscious life at my grandma and grandpa's across the street out in Looking Glass, and they were truly the most wonderful people I've ever known. You can't be a better person than my grandma. She served everyone. All of my friends called her grandma, still do. Everybody she ever came across, she was a mother to. I mean, 10 minutes in, they looked at her like she was their mom. She is an example for all of us. I'm so... I'm so broken that it's going to be 50, 60 years before I get to see her face again. And it's going to be very hard. But I wanted to talk about her because she's one of those people that very few people ever knew her name, probably outside of just this community, because she was just such a servant. But I want to make sure everybody knew who she was. She was the most honest, loving, wonderful person. I've never heard my grandma say a bad thing about anyone, ever. I mean, you could bring up anybody, and her response would be, well, they probably shouldn't do that. She wouldn't pile on anybody. I can remember just bawling my eyes out in my grandma's lap so many times, and her picking me back up, and and giving me the strength to carry on. And I'm just going to miss that so much. But I'm just so grateful that I had the 35 years I did. And I'm grateful I have the wife I have. And I just love you, Grandma.
State Senator Dallas Hurd, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Thanks.
1258, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.